Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm your host, Abraham Hamilton III, joined by the full J-Squared contingent, Mr. Jason Tross on my right, Mr. Jeff Reed on my left, Hannah Farah in the screening room, and we are ready to rock, rock, rock and roll on today's program. As most of you are making your ways from your part-time jobs to your full-time jobs, this is your daily encouragement to make sure that we are serving our families well. We do not want to be named among those, be found among those where we can be legitimately indicted for offering our best everywhere except to our families. We want to make sure that when we show up at home, that we are offering our families what the Lord has called us to offer them in service to them. And I also want to say, if you're one of those people, because I've been in this space myself, where you realize, I've been missing the boat on this. I need to get it together. Well, here's the beautiful thing. The Lord's mercies are new every morning, that you have a fresh opportunity, and let today be the day where we begin to serve our families well. And if you're in the camp where you have been serving your family well, let me encourage you not to become weary in well-doing, but to continue to render unto the Lord what is due him as we serve our families. Well, I want to remind you as well, the Marriage, Family, and Life Conference, June 20th through the 22nd at Hope Church in Tupelo, Mississippi. You do not want to miss it. I'm telling you, it is an amazing event. J. Warner Wallace will be one of the main speakers, Bishop E.W. Jackson, Bishop Vincent Matthews. Then you'll also have, in addition to Miki Addison and myself, we're going to have Stephen Black and Laura Perry. If you know anything about those people's ministries, they minister specifically in the area of sexual brokenness as it pertains to homosexuality and transgenderism. These are some of the issues where the church is taking L's on, and we need to be equipped to, as the theme of the conference is, hold the line. And I am confident that if you miss out on this, you are really missing out on something that I believe God has provided to equip the body of Christ to be faithful and effective in this time. How many of you in your churches are having people ask questions about homosexuality? How many of you are having questions about transgenderism? Is it compatible with the scripture? You know, the whole Revoice debacle occurred in 2018. Well, this is an opportunity to be fortified on an issue, on issues that are prevalent in this time. And we want to encourage you in the areas of marriage, family, and life. We need to be reminded about the sanctity of human life. And so you are invited to attend. Go to urbanfamilytalk.com for more registration information. On the left-hand side of the screen, at the very bottom, there's a conference tab where you can register now. Early registration ends April 1st. And some of you are saying, well, why are you talking about it so early? I'm talking about it early because I have a sneaky suspicion that it might sell out this year. So I don't want you to be caught on the outskirts wishing you had registered early. And then one of the other features of the conference is the apologetics track for children. I've been to a lot of conferences. I haven't been to very many conferences that have apologetics tracks for children. And so this is a full family affair. I'm telling you, it's almost embarrassing how reasonable the fees are for this particular conference. So go to urbanfamilytalk.com and register today. Now, we're going to begin today in Psalm chapter 34. That's a psalm of David. I'm going to read just the first 9 verses of this psalm. I really could read more of it. But this is a powerful, powerful psalm. David writes this psalm immediately after he has the episode at Nob where he's on the run from Saul. Saul is trying to kill him. You know, sometimes we think, you know, you only write songs in a happy place. David is literally running for his life. And where he's at Nob, he ends up getting Goliath's sword and gets the showbread from the temple there. And then he flees to Gath, which is a Philistine city in the modern day Gaza Strip. So he flees to Gath, and he's there before the Philistine king of Gath. And so now he's running from Saul, and now he's taking refuge amongst the Philistines, who are their arch enemies. Remember, David came to prominence in Israel by knocking down their champion. So when he shows up at Gath, the king is like, whoa, isn't this the David that the young ladies in Israel sing the song about? David, as Saul is slaying his thousands and David is 10,000s. What is David? You can almost hear him in the marbles. What is David doing here, eh? What is he coming to our city for, eh? And so David, quick thinking, begins to act like he's lost his mind. He starts foaming at the mouth, acting like, you know, somewhat like an animal, scraping on the walls. And then the Philistine king goes, oh, this guy's out of his mind. Why do y'all bring this crazy person before me? He gets out of it. And so David immediately responds with this psalm. And I want to read a little bit from this psalm for you right now. So here we go. And it's important to remember that these psalms were actually put to music. You know, you want to talk about worship. They were actually put to music. But here we go. Look what David says. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul makes its boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and be glad. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he answered me, and delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant, and their faces shall never be ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all of his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and delivers them. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. Oh, fear the Lord, you his saints, for those who fear him will have no lack. Now, I'm going to share with you how this came about. I was just praying for the show and really praying for the listeners. And I know some of you who are listening to me right now, you're facing some difficulty, facing some hard times. And one of the things that I found is that when difficulty hits, one of the first two things that often go missing is our prayer time and our ability to worship the Lord in the face of difficulty. That some of us have been raised with an understanding of God as a transactional God, as if his magnificence is diminished by our individualized struggle, our individual difficulty. And I just want to encourage you to get out of that mindset. There's a word in Hebrew, todah, which means it literally means to worship the Lord in light of blessings yet to be received. Moving beyond a transactional approach to worship and moving to the place where we reflect on his all-surpassing majesty, regardless of the position we find ourselves in. And so one of the things that I've learned over the years, and this is just me sharing a personal testimony here. This is not, a Bible teaching per se. But one of the things I developed the habit of whenever life hits in any particular direction, if I have a resounding defeat or if I have a great victory, the first person I want to share that with to express myself two, in light of those things, are the Lord. When life hits in a difficult manner, when something goes terribly wrong, I've developed a habit by God's grace, and may the Lord help me to continue in this with consistency. I've developed a habit of going to the Lord first. There's a frustration at work. There's a frustration with a personal relationship. There's something that is going on. I try to go to the Lord first. And I found several things happened in that. And this is based on Psalm 73 and a bunch of other scripture. But I find when I take my frustration, my disappointment, my struggles to the Lord first, the Lord enables me to see my circumstances from a different perspective. You know, not merely the immediate perception of me as a human being, but the Lord, you know, allows you a glimpse to see it from a broader perspective. And then the other thing I found is that it reduces the amount of times where you would lash out at individuals. Most of the time, it's people that's closest to you. The reason why the people that's closest to you get hurt most frequently is because they're the closest. The people that are further removed often don't get the fire-breathing dragon. You know what I mean? And so what I found that by being able to go to the Lord with these things, that I get additional insight, clarity, and wisdom, and it reduces the penchant to lash out at those around you. Conversely, I've endeavored to cultivate the habit of after a great victory, something tremendous has transpired. I try to go to the Lord with that first as well. And what I found has happened over time is that the Lord has refined my capacity for worship. The Lord has refined my hunger for worship. The Lord has turned little old me into a worshiper based on that, and has cultivated an intimacy where these are my go-tos. These are my go-tos. And so from that, these are, by God's grace, practices I've endeavored to pursue before I got married. And then secondarily, since I've been married, the second person I go to when there's something rough going on, after I've gone to the Lord with it, I go to my wife. No matter what it is, I go to my wife. And if it's something great that has transpired, I go to my wife. And because here, as a result of that, in our growing together, my wife has truly become my best friend. That this is the human being, flesh and blood. Whenever anything happens, she's the one I want to go to. Now, all of this has been the product of the Lord kind of growing me and stretching me and understanding worship and communion with him. And then it's had the effect of being able to aid in developing a relationship with my spouse. So now getting back to David here, as he's writing this psalm, it's easy from this standpoint to kind of see, well, yeah, you know, David won and David was victorious. But put yourself in David's position at the time this is happening. You are on the run for your life from Saul. Saul just tried to pin you to the wall with a javelin. You hear what I'm telling you? And you're in such a rush, you have any weapons on you. You tell the priest in Nob, well, you know, I'm in such haste to attend to the king's business that I don't even have my sword with me. And you're known as David, the man of war? I'm like, what? So he knows that that's a risk that he's taking. And then, not only that, he flees to the Philistines. I mean, folks, if you put yourself in David's position as he's writing this psalm, his stepping foot on Philistine soil would have resulted in him having been off with his head. And then in the moment, in that press, the Lord delivers him in that press. That is where this psalm has come from. That is where this has driven from. It's an encouragement. It's a basis for us, because the Bible tells us the things that are written aforetime are written for our learning, that through the patience and comfort of the scripture, we might have hope. So as followers of the Lord Jesus Christ, David's testimony through this psalm and the entire unfolding of 1 Samuel chapter 21 becomes our heritage. So we inherit this from David. So it is God's desire that having this inheritance from David, we are able now to enter into Todah. That though we're facing something, we may be facing a giant mountain. We may be facing difficulty with occupational circumstances and economic circumstances, and facing difficulty in relationships, or even having marital difficulty. But don't allow that to rob you of worship. Don't allow that to deprive you of being able to press beyond what is temporal and gain an eternity-based perspective. Because from there, from that perspective, we may be able to engage in Todah, to where we're able to worship the Lord, even though we might not have the tangible evidence of his provision, that we know he is a provider. And we can live what James wrote, that we count it all joy when we suffer difficulty. Why? Because we know that the trying of our faith produces patience, that we know that if God is in this with us, it is for our benefit, regardless of what it looks like. And this is just one of the practical, tangible sources to help us move from merely being members of the Lord's family to engaging in the lifestyle of worship that is capped off with us being able to worship regardless of the circumstances.
One word gets Google headquarters in a tizzy. Hi, I'm Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. The word family seems perfectly appropriate to you and me, but not according to the staff at Google. It's been recently revealed that at a Google meeting, employees were enraged about the use of the word. They claimed that it was used in a way that links families with children. But they also argued that it was homophobic and offensive. Seriously? This foolish backlash received wide support throughout the company. Even the vice president of the company was quick to support this absurd opinion that the word family was not inclusive. This is yet another example of left-wing Google employees bringing their nonsensical politics to work with them. There is proof Google controls and manipulates the political narrative in favor of a very liberal agenda. Google has a company-wide political bias, and it's anything but inclusive. Stay informed at Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org. That's lc.org.
At Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, the world is our campus. The mission of WBS is to equip shepherds and theologians through transforming graduate theological education. Some seminaries are big box seminaries, manufacturing and marketing pastors. At Wesley Biblical Seminary, we handcraft shepherds and theologians for Christ Church. Wesley Biblical Seminary, life on life formation for Great Commission impact.
Thoughts of the child you were carrying keep pouring over in your mind. You wish things could be different, and the loss is overwhelming. A deep, unrelenting sadness overshadows your days, and you wonder if you will feel whole again. There is hope and healing from a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline, 866-482-LIFE, and talk with someone who has been where you are. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Donald Trump has often, and rightly so, been compared to the biblical character of King Cyrus. He might even more accurately be compared to Nehemiah. Nehemiah famously built a wall around the city of Jerusalem because the city was defenseless against marauders. Nehemiah learned several things about building a physical barrier to protect people. Number one, he learned that his city and his nation had bitter enemies who would fiercely oppose anyone who sought to protect it. And he learned the only way to complete such a project is through sheer persistence and the power of prayer. In a similar way, President Trump has implacable adversaries who, because of their disdain for America, are doing everything in their power to stop him. Now, we don't know what the president's prayer life is like, but he needs us to stand in the gap with him and for him through our prayers and support.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm going to start this segment off with something a little different. I was going to go in one direction, but I want to share this with you. I just so happened to come across the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, his annual report concerning the worldwide threat assessment, which happened to be released yesterday. And digging into the report, this is the office that is led by Director Daniel Coats. And this report follows the testimony he offered before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. And this Office of the Director of National Intelligence report, called the ODNI report, had an interesting little tidbit in it that I thought, once again, folks, this is one of the reasons why, and I really even hate to do it like this, but this is why people listen to alternative news sources. This is why a lot of you listen to the Hamilton Corner, because I didn't hear this shared anywhere on the Talking Snake Media, and I don't watch it for consumption. I really try to pay attention to some things for show prep purposes, but I'm just going to share with you this little tidbit. This is not even the whole report. I just want to give you this portion of the report, because the ODNI report includes a map concerning worldwide threat assessments. And the report warns that both the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda maintain global terror networks that are far from defeated. Mm-hmm. The Islamic State still has, according to this report, thousands of fighters in Iraq and Syria alone. In addition to that, and in case you don't know, the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda are rivals. They're not working together. They're rivals. They have different, slightly different views or whatever that causes them to fight one another. But despite years of counterterrorism pressure, Al-Qaeda's senior leadership remains active and in command of a widespread network. Now, here's the little tidbit that I want you to be aware of. Al-Qaeda's senior leaders, these are the upper echelon, the top levels of Al-Qaeda, their senior leaders are strengthening the network's global command structure and continuing to encourage attacks against the West, including the United States. Al-Qaeda's senior leadership, according to the Office of the Director of National Intelligence's report, the ODNI report officially recognizes the presence of Al-Qaeda's senior leadership in Iran, as well as Afghanistan and Pakistan, for years. You hear what I'm telling you? So the Office of the Director of National Intelligence released a report yesterday that Iran, the same Iran where we send unmarked planes with cash money and hundreds of billions of dollars, the same Iran that it turns out that under former President Obama, they completely squashed an investigation that allowed Hezbollah to become one of the largest drugs cartels in the world, that this same Iran, who is an ally of Hezbollah, in addition to all of that stuff, they have been harboring the senior leadership of Al-Qaeda. Think that might be important for the American people to know? You think the American people might want to know a little bit about that? I think so. I think so if we find out that over the last 10 years, Al-Qaeda's senior leadership structure has been hanging out in Iran at the same time that all of these other little deals we've been doing with Iran have been going on. I think the American people might want to know about that. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that might be important. Man, when I say talking snake media, I mean it. The lack of curiosity is deafening. Now, we don't have in the Hamilton Corner full research staffs where you have 20 people that just sit around and do research all day. No, it's Jason, Jeff, and myself, and Hannah. That's it. And Hannah doesn't really do any of the research, really. And really, I primarily do almost all of the research by myself. Literally, probably 98%, wouldn't you say? 98%. I do it by myself. Now, if I can find this report, which, by the way, I know y'all don't even know all the inner workings, but I do more than just host radio here at American Family Association. So I have very little time to do research for the program. But if I can find this report, I know the Talking Snake Media can find it. But their lack of curiosity, folks, it's astounding. It's astounding. They pick what they want to pick because they are looking to create the sentiment they want to create. We just saw this huge debacle with the Covington High School students and Nick Sandman, and how immediately all of these lying suckers ran with this narrative. Oh, this is a smug racist in a MAGA hat. And it turns out they have over nearly 2 hours worth of video that shows the opposite. And they're doing the exact same thing right now with this incident of the Empire actor, Mr. Smollett, whatever. I don't know his first name. I don't watch Empire. He's claiming at 2:00 in the morning. And listen, first of all, if the man has been assaulted, I pray for a speedy recovery for him. It's despicable if people would attack others for any reason. But I find it very curious, with all the violence that's happened in Chicago, this is what you want to report? This is what you want to report. I mean, it's almost 600 people that have been killed in Chicago in 2018. I didn't see any stories about that. I get the idea that this guy is a celebrity, but I have a sneaky suspicion the reason why the media wants to run with it is because of the audacious claims of people running around with Make America Great Again hats at 2 a.m. in Chicago, Illinois, and say this is MAGA country. In Chicago? Man. And if it did happen, that's despicable. And whoever did it, they need to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. But certainly, if we haven't learned anything, we should at least know, following the Nick Sandman incident and the Covington High School students and Nathan Phillips, we probably should wait a little while before we conclude we know for a fact what all happened. Because these lying, talking snakes, they lie. Joy Behar told you, why does the media get things wrong so much? Because they hate Trump and they want him out. So anything that could possibly be used to hate Trump and to get him out of office, that's what they want to run with, regardless of the facts. While you got this huge report from the director of the Office of National Intelligence that's telling us for nearly the last decade, the leadership of Al-Qaeda been chilling in Iran, drinking chai, and smucking it up while we're sending money over there. Does anybody else see a problem here? This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. I was able to find this report. You can't tell me they can't find it with their hundreds of millions of dollars and their full staffs and their research departments to just let the American people know what's happening. No. You have to listen to American Family Radio to get this kind of information. You have to follow the Hamilton Corner on Facebook and on Twitter and on YouTube, because I'll tell you that, in case you're wondering, Al-Qaeda's senior leadership has been hanging out in Iran for almost the last decade. Yeah, that's been happening. Yeah, the same Iran that's buddy-buddy with Russia. Yeah. And listen, I don't know everything about Chicago, but one thing I know, in the area that this supposedly went down, there sure are a lot of cameras around there. So there should be some video. I just wanted to share that with you because I thought that was pretty big news. So for these last years, the senior leadership, the brain trust of Al-Qaeda, all in Iran? At the same time where you had just so happened to have Louis Farrakhan over there leading shouts of death to America in Farsi? The same time Louis Farrakhan is over there shouting that the great Satan America's days are numbered and Al-Qaeda senior leadership just happens to be there? Come on, man. There's a lot of people that got upset when President Trump said the media was the enemy of the American people. When you start paying attention to this stuff, you start thinking, man, why wouldn't they share that? I mean, some things are beyond partisanship, aren't they? Shouldn't they be? But I'm learning. No. I'm learning. It seems everything is, if it ain't partisan, it ain't nothing. And it's just utterly ridiculous. Moving right along. When I was on Today's Issues earlier this morning, this came up, a conversation, because you guys know if you listen to the program, I had a lot to say about New York's, their blood governor and the passage of this diabolical law to kill children there up until the 40th week of gestation. I still can't hardly say that without getting a knot in my throat. And this blood governor wants to light up buildings to celebrate. How do you celebrate that? When Dr. Beisner was on the show, we had a conversation. He initiated the conversation, but how the book of Proverbs tells us that those who hate wisdom love death. How else do you explain somebody wanting to light up? And I shared on this program, if a person has a pet that they have to put down and euthanize, they don't celebrate that. You know, people having to put their pets down, that's a difficult circumstance for most of the pet owners. But you want to celebrate? Consciences are seared in our nation, man. Consciences are seared. My sister and friend Mickey Addison posted, sometimes she finds it difficult to cry out to the Lord for mercy for our nation because of the wickedness in our country. The things that we not only approve of, but we celebrate. When I say we, I know it's not most of you are listening to me who don't support this at all, but we're still in this country. Yesterday, the state of Virginia considered a law. And this is the thing, and this is something that I think gets either lost in the communication or it's not highlighted enough. This Reproductive Health Act that the New York governor signed into law on the 22nd, the 46th anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision, they brought that law, attempted to pass it for the previous 10 years. So people say, oh, this is just the latest effort to respond to President Trump's nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court and efforts that potentially could end up with Ruth Bader Ginsburg being replaced. No, you're wrong. They've been trying to get this law passed for a decade. For a decade. Think about that. Think about that. For a decade, while Barack Obama is in office, while all of the things are happening, the New York legislators were trying to get this same law passed, and it took them 10 years to get it passed. Well, the same thing in Virginia. In Virginia, I'll tell you a little bit about the law. Then I'm going to play some audio. But let me, from the onset, say that by God's grace, and I thank him for this, that efforts to pass this law in Virginia, both in the House of Delegates and in their Senate, has failed. So this law did not pass in Virginia. I think that's important to say. When I talked about it this morning on today's issues, I did not have that information. I got that information once I got off the air this morning. But the law didn't pass. So praise God that it didn't pass. But let me urge you with this caution. It didn't pass this year. The proponents of this legislation I'm about to describe to you will be back next year as they have attempted to pass the same legislation in previous years. So this particular bill, sponsored by Delegate Kathy Tran, and in case you're not aware, in the state legislature in Virginia, their House of Representatives is referred to as the House of Delegates. So when I say Delegate Kathy Tran, it may be the equivalent of your local state representative. Okay, Kathy Tran introduced House Bill 2491 called the Repeal Act, which sought to repeal the state's existing restrictions on late term abortions. If passed, the measure would have eliminated the state's requirement that second and third trimester abortions be performed only to preserve the health or life of the woman. You heard that? It would remove those restrictions. So it would completely destroy any impediments for second and third trimester abortions in Virginia. In Virginia, if this bill would have passed, a woman seeking to abort would no longer have to obtain an ultrasound before an abortion. Now, this is late term, folks. These are big babies. We have 5 children. I've witnessed my wife's tummy grow to the 40th week of gestation. And in two instances, even longer. My oldest son was a week late according to their schedule, but he's right on time according to the Lord's schedule. According to existing Virginia law, 3 physicians had to agree that a third trimester abortion was necessary to preserve the life of the mother, the health or life. So 3 doctors would have had to agree. This repeal act would have gotten rid of all of that. And in addition to removing that, and remember, the bill is called the Repeal Act. It's repealing impediments to these late-term abortions. In addition to that, the law would have removed the requirement that second and third trimester abortions be performed in hospitals. Now, like, just pause for 1 second. The people that advocate for this type of debauchery, they say that they're concerned about the health and safety of the mother. Well, you tell me what can be healthy about removing the requirements that if you have a baby that late in development that you're trying to murder, you don't think they need to be in a hospital? Folks, the conscience is, our country is in desperate need of the Spirit of God. Desperate need. These are the things that have been happening behind the scenes for years. And thanks be to God that this bill is dead for now, but they'll be back next year. When we come back on the other side of the break, we'll open the phone lines, but I'm going to play some audio for you from Delegate Kathy Tran, and I also want you to hear from Virginia's Governor Northam so that you can hear with your own ears what it sounds like when the consciences of people in our nation have been seen.
Who said this? Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. I was quoting none other than George Washington, our first president and father of our country, who said specifically that religion and morality are indispensable supports for our government and our culture. We're going to be going to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington, in June and September. If you'd like more information on this, please go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com. We'll also be going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. If you'd like to do both tours or one or the other, that's fine. For all the information, again, June and September, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. We'd love to have you during these 2019 tours.
Reparations for slavery? This is David Wheaton, host of The Christian Worldview. You'll remember the story of Zacchaeus. He was a hated Jewish tax collector who were known for overcharging. But then he met and believed in Jesus, saying, "Behold, Lord, half of my possessions I will give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will give back four times as much." That is biblical restitution, repayment to those directly harmed. Contrast that to the call for slavery reparations today that would compel those who didn't commit injustice to pay those who weren't directly harmed. That only fosters entitlement and resentment. Hear part two of an interview on race and reparations at thechristianworldview.org. This weekend, we'll discuss the greatest social injustice, abortion.
Listen to The Christian Worldview with David Wheaton, Saturday mornings at 8 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. There was an interesting exchange on ABC's The View the other day. Whoopi Goldberg wondered why the mainstream media is always so quick to attack President Trump and his supporters with what turns out to be fake news, referring to the BuzzFeed story refuted by the special prosecutor's office and the incident involving the Catholic boys in front of the Lincoln Memorial. Joy Behar answered the question.
Because we're desperate to get Trump out of office. That's why.
Not everybody, though.
I think that that's the reason. I think the press jumps the gun a lot because we have so much circumstantial evidence against this guy that we basically are hoping that, you know, Cohen's got the goods and what have you. And so it's wishful thinking.
Well, at least Joy Behar was honest. I'm Todd Starnes.
The Hamilton Corner podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. We got a lot to do in this segment. We will open the phone lines. The number to call if you'd like to be a part of the program is 888-589-8840. That number again is 888-589-8840. Anything we've discussed so far in the program is fair game, but I want to get to some of this audio for you because you have to hear this with your own ears. You have to hear this with your own ears. So I'm going to start with this exchange between Kathy Tran and the chairman of the committee where her bill was being presented yesterday. Listen to this. Please play clip number one.
So how late in the third trimester would you be able to do that?
You know, it's very unfortunate that our physicians, witnesses, were not able to attend today to speak specifically.
No, I'm talking about your bill. How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
Or physical health.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm talking about the mental health.
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay. But to the end of the third trimester.
Yep. I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
So, where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would make.
I understand
that.
I'm asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
My bill would allow that. Yes. What? So a woman is entering active labor. Her cervix has dilated. And you are saying at that moment, my bill would allow that? Yes. Remember the days when we were told that, oh, you right-wing zealots need to pipe down. Abortion is made to be, it should be safe, legal, and rare. And we're talking about I can't even fix my mouth to say it. Folks, we're talking about infanticide. We're talking about infanticide. Then New York's governor, the supposed moderate, is there any such thing as a moderate Democrat anymore? And amongst the candidates, no. If there's some amongst the party members, I don't know, maybe, I guess, but amongst the elected officials? Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia, he was asked about this proposed legislation. And I'm still dumbfounded at what he said. Listen to Virginia's governor. Play clip number two, please.
First thing I would say, this is why decisions such as this should be made by providers, physicians, and the mothers and fathers that are involved. There are, you know, when we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government not to be involved in these types of decisions. We want the decision to be made by the mothers and their providers. And this is why, Julie, that legislators, most of whom are men, by the way, shouldn't be telling a woman what she should and shouldn't be doing with her body.
Man, please. So much in this. So much. So right off the bat, the first thing he says is multiple physicians have to consent to a late-term abortion. Well, the Repeal Act was getting rid of that. Which that isn't even good, but the Repeal Act was getting rid of that. Secondly, folks, I said this before, and I knew I was right about it when I said it, but this confirms it. The Nazi Party is still alive and well today. It's called the Democrats in America. Remember, the Nazi Party, we had a caller yesterday that said it. Nazi in German is for the National Socialist Workers' Party. Socialism was the core of Nazism. See, in modern America, revisionist history is the order of the day. And so they want to present to you that Nazism is somehow something on the right end of the political spectrum. That's a lie. The Nazis were socialists. And who are declared themselves to be socialists today? Either in by name identifications, like Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib and all of these folks that call themselves democratic socialists, and by policy preferences, Kamala Harris and all of them. They are socialists. She wants to abolish private medical insurance. The socialists. And who was the party in Germany that said, well, you know what? In addition to the Jews, we want to also kill those who are deformed. Did you hear Governor Northam? Sometimes in these late-term abortions, we're talking about deformities. So somebody, because somebody has a deformity, that means they should be killed? How are you any different than Joseph Mengele? I'll answer that for you. You're not. You're not. The value of a human being isn't based on whether they have a deformity or not. So So you're saying people with deformities need to be killed? Folks, think. Let that sit in for a moment. This is what the governor, the current governor of Virginia, just said. You heard it with your own two ears. Then he goes on to say that what will happen in these instances of late-term abortion, a baby will be delivered. That's what he said. A baby will be delivered. Then we'll have a conversation to decide whether or not it needs to be resuscitated or whether or not what we're going to do with the baby after that. That's up to the conversation. Folks. So we're not talking morning after pill. You're talking about delivering a live. Delivering a child. And then we're going to debate whether or not the child should be killed. Folks. This is where we are. These people are talking about delivering live babies and killing that. Not rendering aid. And before you think that this is a recent iteration, and the only reason why I know this is because I did research back in the day, but do you know that state senator in Illinois, Barack Obama, voted against a bill called the Baby Born Alive Act? Oh, yeah. A bill was presented in the Illinois state legislature that said if an abortion was attempted on a child, and the child, through some miracle of God's divine providence, survived an abortion attempt, then a doctor would be required by Illinois law to render assistance to that child. And Barack Obama voted against it. Nah. That baby, if they were trying to kill it and it survived and it's born anyway, let it die. Folks, this is evil. This is beyond partisanship. This is evil. This is evil. We have officially abandoned the era of safe, legal, and rare. And let's just be honest, they weren't supporting that anyway. That's just the wordsmithing they used to try to make it more palatable to the American populace. But now the covers have been removed. Now we saying shout it. I played the audio before. I forgot the actress's name. But she was talking about, oh, yeah, when I had my abortion in Oregon, that was my best one. What? Again, think about euthanizing a pet. If someone came out and said, when we put Fido down, that was our best euthanization, our culture would say they were sociopaths. Our culture would lock them in federal prison like Michael Vick. But when you have a governor who get on national on radio and you have legislators all over the country, that'll say, if a baby is born, we may resuscitate it. That's a person, man. To the phone lines we go. We'll start in Indiana where John is on the line. John, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Brother Abe, I wanted to remind you that Senator Harris, when she was Attorney General before Javier Becerra, was the one that went after David DeLayden.
That's right.
With the Planned Parenthood merchandising of human remains and the body parts.
That's right.
And I know your name is Abraham, but she reminds me what Isaac said to Jacob. You know, the voice of Hillary, but the hands are the hands of Obama. I don't know how to pronounce her first name, but I think we'll just call her Clintama. Clintama Harris, because she is so pro-abortion. And the thing is, it's not just that she has Bernie Sanders or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's economic aspects of socialism, but she even has the laugh of Hillary Clinton when she was laughing at suggestions about when she tried to deflect questions about whether or not everybody would lose their private health insurance. So there's nothing new there. It's just the same things we had with the 8 years of Obama and the 2 years of the Hillary campaign. Just rolled into one. It's just really scary. And so if the Democrats, we do have another shutdown, I think the Hamilton they need to come see is down in Tupelo.
John, thank you for your call and your comments. The cackle is back with that one. You're right. Back to the phone lines we go. Next to David in Mississippi. Thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Abraham. I appreciate your ministry. I appreciate your program. Learning a lot from it, so thank you. A couple of comments. First of all, about the actor that was attacked, we were listening to the story, me and my wife, and we both looked at each other and said, that doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. And so we weren't buying it at all. And I thought, well, what did they want to us to see about this story? Well, they didn't know anything about the attackers other than they were wearing a MAGA hat. Mm-hmm. They were sure to mention the noose that went around this gentleman's neck, and they were sure to mention racial slurs as well and homophobia. So they wanted it was clear that they were trying to characterize people that wear MAGA hats that support President Trump, and therefore by proxy, President Trump is a racist and a homophobe. And that's the storyline that we got out of it, because it did not make sense to us at all.
You're absolutely right, David. That's unfortunate. And I'm in a pattern. I'm waiting. You know, I'm not going to weigh in on this because I don't trust them. The talking snakes. And it's just like you. They led with what they want you to hear, exactly as you observed. And if that's true, well, guess what? I'll come out and say that. But if that's not true, and I believe at this point, the talking snakes have earned the hesitation of the American people. It's frankly it's disgusting. We'll go next to Virginia, where Monty is on the line. Monty, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Yes, Abraham, I'm going to try to be brief, and I'm not very good at it, but I know you have a limited amount of time. I've been blessed to have lived in Louisiana and California, Florida and Carolinas, and mostly Virginia, because that's mostly my family heritage. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Northern Virginians, you put Northern Virginia over into California, you bring West Virginia back into Virginia, and you'd have a conservative viewpoint, and you'd have that liberal probably falling off out into Catalina Island or somewhere or whatever those people are doing. But, you know, Abraham, the most important thing is that we have a local checks and balances. This Northrum is bought into politics just like the Clinton Foundation came here and gave it to McAuliffe. You know, you go down to Alabama and you have wonderful people that were run for senator that were, you know, judges, and you think it's all the same ball of wax. I mean, I'm 65 miles from D.C. I'm 90 miles from Richmond. I'm Northern Virginian as far as where we are geographically. But all these elections get bought up by people that have absolutely nothing to do with the religious heritage of what Virginians are. You know, Abraham, we are considered the birthplace of the First Amendment rights right here in Culpeper, Virginia.
That's right.
Got two radio stations that reflect you guys, and you are the most wonderful lamp and light into the world, and I so wish that more people could listen to you and listen to AFR. We have just a wonderful connection, but you know, you can't buy elections in areas where people don't believe anything in your behavior. If you're not an activist and you're a Christian in name, by the Lord's standard, you are not in Christ, because you're not doing the will of God.
Monty, thank you very much for your call and your comments. We'll try to squeeze one more in. Tim from Arkansas, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Go right ahead, you have 20 seconds.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I want to admonish everyone, that your listener, to watch the show documentary Silent Scream, because it shows abortion under ultrasound. If you don't get sick looking at that, there's something wrong with you. Every Christian ought to watch it, and every person that watches that, voice their opinion, because it's brutal, it's inhumane, it's barbaric, and we as Christians have got to, you know, take a stand and say, this is barbaric, we're not going to have it in our nation anymore.
Thank you, Tim. I saw the documentary. It is as you said it. Folks, be girded up and continue to stay on the wall in prayer. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.